What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello, welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. A special welcome to those of you listening for the first time. For those of you who have not tapped into the podcast, specifically those of you on YouTube or on Spotify, we have ceased doing video. We are in the not too distant future going to start producing some special video presentations. And when we do that, we will let you know. But we have returned to our roots. We've gone back to just doing audio. Interestingly, listenership is up. When you started doing this audio only and people are tapping into this more than they were video. I think we've got a great plan. I'm looking forward to producing some specially prepared video segments. And when we produce video, the information, what we produce, is going to be best suited for benefiting those who are looking to tap into the video. We might include that as part of the podcast. There might be an audio equivalent of it where we don't have to depend on that video part of the presentation, but we're really excited about the pivot, the direction that we're going as we approach our sixth anniversary. Yes, we have been doing the World of UX podcast for almost 6 years now. This is episode number 306. We recently celebrated our 300th episode. Oh, but we're pretty happy and we are moving forward with a lot of excitement here today. At any rate, we're going to continue. We took a little bit of a break last week and just went into what we call a potpourri when we have the break segments, and we're back at it with our current series entitled Harsh Realities of UX Maturity. We're talking about what UX maturity really is. We're talking about where our minds need to be with regard to UX maturity. We're trying to break up that old perception of what we thought, what many of us taught what UX maturity was, and trying to get people to understand the importance, what UX maturity touches, what types of things are impacted by a sound level of UX maturity, and what's impacted when UX maturity is not where it should be. So we're excited about this content and the way that we're going about presenting this. It's out of sequence. There's no rhyme or reason to the order in which we are presenting this content. We're just talking about various aspects of UX maturity and trying to inspire some people to have more of a mindset to manage UX maturity, to be more aware of what's going on with UX maturity, to come to the realization that whatever the level of UX maturity is and wherever that maturity applies, we are responsible for that. Each one of us as UX professionals, you can't just come over here and get a job like a lot of people used to do. And some people still do. I still see people today. I want to transition into UX. Why? You want to be a doctor? Why? Want to be a lawyer? Why? Want to be a construction worker? Why? You want to be a landscaper? Why? You want to be an artist? You should want to be a particular thing because you love it, because you have a passion for it, because you have at least some type of understanding of it. A lot of people have come into UX over the years with no understanding of what it is, no passion for it, no realization of what they're getting into. And of all the different professional areas I just mentioned, each one of them has been established for a very long time. You name it. It's pretty much been around for a long time. There's not many disciplines as young as UX, and UX is roughly 30 to 35 years old as a discipline in mainstream. It had preceding segments, human-computer interaction, information architecture first hit the professional world, first came up in the mid-1970s. There were other versions, if you will, of what we now call user experience that pre-existed when it exploded in the mid to late 90s. However, now you've got people who don't understand the history, again, don't know what they're getting into, no understanding that everything every person who occupies space in UX does, it impacts how people perceive us, it impacts their expectations of us, and yes, it impacts UX maturity. And when UX maturity is high, more things get done. There's better expectations. The practitioners drive greater value. If folks get into UX for the wrong reasons and UX maturity is low, expectations take a hit. The value, not just the proposition, but what we bring to the table, nothing. It's relegated a lot of times in situations like that to just visual design efforts, and people are just making screens. People say, we don't make screens. People say that a lot. There's a lot of people in UX that that's all they do is make screens, and they don't want UX maturity to increase because it will expose them for who they are. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, posers, retrofits, and upstarts before this series is over. That has caused us a lot of problems because there are people who not only do they occupy space in UX and have no understanding of the discipline, don't understand the history, don't really have a passion for it. They're here for a check. And some people are giving them exactly that, a check. But folks, when those people operate, UX maturity takes a huge hit and everybody suffers as a result. So we're trying to broaden understanding of UX maturity today. And for this segment, I want to speak specifically about UX maturity and the rise of specializations. UX maturity and the rise of specializations. Now, a little bit of history. And some of these things are things I've said before, but for those, especially those that are new, they'll need to hear this. I'm debating whether or not I want to say want or need. It's both. Some people will want to hear it, but some people need to hear this because they don't know it. A lot of people, I've seen people come into UX in 2013, 2014, and they will literally tell you that they came into UX at the beginning. No, they did not. No, they did not. If you came into UX in 2013, 2014, 2015, UX had been around roughly 20 years before you came around. They didn't call it UX, but we were doing the work. I started in 1995. I started doing the work. I fell into it. Like a lot of early people, a lot of people today choose to get into UX. A lot of us stumbled. Matter of fact, most of us stumbled into UX and we ended up learning things. Things just started to just form and we learned how to advance. We learned what needed to be done. And then everybody was humble. You didn't see people throwing their weight around. You didn't see people going around putting themselves out there. Isn't it interesting? A lot of people are told to put themselves out there now. Nobody, quote unquote, put themselves out there in 1995, 2000, 2005. Everybody was just trying to take the discipline forward. And so it wasn't until a certain point that type of thing started to happen, and that detract from UX maturity. But at any rate, I'm getting ahead of myself. Prior to 2011, I'm going to start there for this story tonight. Prior to 2011, everybody in UX, pretty much, I'm talking 98, 99% of us, there are a few people that were specialists in about that time. But prior to 2011, if you were in UX, most of the jobs were at creative agencies, by the way, you did everything. You did usability, the equivalent of engineering, usability engineering. You focused on usability. You were grounded in heuristics. If you started before 2011, you did information architecture. You did research. And we didn't go around separating qualitative from quantitative specializations today. You didn't run around saying, well, I'm mixed methods. I'm quantitative. Oh, I'm quality. You didn't hear people doing that. If you did research, you did research. And I always sort of laugh when I hear about those things, because if you did quantitative research, you were automatically going to become curious about the qualitative, because quantitative tells you what's being done, but qualitative helps you get into the weeds to find out why, the why story behind all of the what. Research wasn't split. Again, no specializations. You did research, you did usability testing, we did card sorting, we did tree testing, we did first click testing. We did all the things. You name the type of research that could be done from a UX perspective, and we did exactly that. We did interaction design. We applied interaction design principles, which tied into heuristics, basically. You can't really separate the two, but for all intents and purposes, it is important to know these are interaction principles, such as what Tognazzini did and the famous interaction design principles that he has published over the years. And interface design was a part of that, but we didn't do a lot of interface design. As a matter of fact, the vast majority of UX professionals prior to 2011 were terrible when it came to visual design. And we usually worked with people whose specialization, they were visual designers. They were not usually part of the UX team. They were part of a creative department, but these were all the different things that we were counted on to do, the usability and heuristics, information architecture, research, and interaction interface design. And can't leave the last one out, strategy. UX professionals in the earlier days, we were strategists. So we understood the business. We knew how the business was going to be impacted. I see people today saying, you know what? Here's a new pivot in UX. We need to start being concerned about business. I have seen several people out on the internet, and they're telling this to people who don't know any better. They're saying that we need to focus on business. That'll help us. We always did engage in business. That's what's interesting about all of this. All of this is prior to 2011. Discipline-wide UX maturity at that time was higher than it is now. That ties into the expectations. That ties into the value proposition, the way that people were interviewed. Do you know that I did not show anybody? Again, I started doing UX work in 1995. I started doing UX full-time in 2005. I do remember showing somebody a portfolio at that time, but when I started working at the creative agency in 2007, there was no portfolio review. When I went to another agency in 2010, there was no portfolio review. I went to work for IBM. Yeah, I mean, this is on my profile. You'll see it. Go to LinkedIn. Look at my profile. I went to IBM. There was no portfolio review when I went to IBM. I went back to the agency world. No portfolio review. I did work for Cengage and National Geographic Learning. No portfolio review. The way that people are hired is reflective of UX maturity. Higher UX maturity organizations do not need to see, I know some people could get upset with me about this, but you know what? That's par for the course. You don't need to see a portfolio. You're not dependent on it to understand who it is that you are considering for the roles that you have to fill. It's not a gauge, folks. It is such a jaded currency. We're going to talk about this a little bit more before this series is over, because UX maturity, where UX maturity is, it also determines what currency you value when you're hiring people. And folks, portfolios is not it. And I don't want to go down a tangent. I'll go down that road. Don't want to do that tonight. But at any rate, discipline-wide, UX maturity was higher. It was higher. The way people hire today, completely off base. And it's so dysfunctional. That's why people who are thoroughly skilled at what they do many times struggle to find positions. It's the reality of it. I've struggled too. It is what it is. So again, prior to 2011, we did all the things that I mentioned. Discipline-wide, UX maturity was higher. Around 2017 to 2019, and consider the fact that after 2011, misinformation started coming to play. There was an explosion of UX jobs. The UX gold rush came into play. And so now you've got all of these things are starting to become warped in UX. When the discipline pivoted and they start calling us UX designers and UX architects, it happened right before that 2011 mark. I had the title UX in my job title for the first time in 2009. And it stayed that way for several years. And to this day, it still does. The UX is in my title today. I know what UX is. It doesn't bother me. Some people say they don't like it because they don't know what it means. Well, you should know what it means. If you occupy space in UX, you should know what that means today. But around 2017 to 2019, that's when something big happened because that's when specializations started to pop up a little bit. But it wasn't until then, around 2017 to 2019, that you started to see these types of approaches to the discipline explode. And this is when, because back when we did all the things, one person for usability, information architecture, research, interaction and interface design, and strategy. One person did all of that. Folks, we did it well. If you were getting any education on UX, not only were you taught all of those things, but you were taught in some degree of detail, and you would do it in your education, and you'd go to work and you would do it. It was streamlined. Expectations were clear on the educational side of things. They were clear when you got the job. But when specializations came along, you only have to focus on maybe research. You only have to focus on design. And by that time, a lot of visual designers had, frankly, falsified their way into UX roles. And when they started focusing on design, they started focusing on what they used to do as visual designers and just calling it UX. Matter of fact, that was around the same time, a few years prior to 2017, around 2012, 2013, was when you started seeing UX/UI for the first time ever. If you said UX/UI in 2005, everybody would have looked at you and wondered what in the world you were talking about. And there were the contingent of people who did not understand what UX was, but they never tried to equate us with visual designers. What visual designers did and who they were, it was clear. And we appreciated and loved visual designers. I worked with some of the most talented visual designers in my life when I was in the creative agency world. And actually, some of those people are doing UX work today. And it's my understanding that they do a great job at it. I know some other ones, they brought that same mentality because the people who were in visual design, they had a dog-eat-dog mentality. There was a lot of emotional intelligence deficiency in those ranks. They were very violent. A lot of them, I've seen people get into just shy of fisticuffs arguing about a visual design initiatives. And I saw somebody once take their glasses and just ball them up and then walk out of the room. And this kind of thing. I've seen no-about situation where people would jump across tables to grab somebody by the throat. This was what it was like being at a creative agency, by the way. It was normal for these types of intensity levels to come up. But the world of visual design was an ego-driven arena. And I've said this before, and the world of UX design was void of ego. And still today, if you're going to thrive at UX, you have to become more emotionally intelligent, and you have to check your ego at the door. Because you're here to advocate for users, you're here to marry business needs and user needs, you're here to find the sweet spot between user needs, business needs, and constraints. You're not here to elevate or put what you're doing on a pedestal. It is not about you at all. And so people are coming into UX, and especially from the visual design world, many of them did not transition into the discipline. They just came in. So at any rate, they come along, specializations. They got designers. All they do is design, many of whom were visual designers. Today, when you see designer, you have to talk with somebody to find out what they're actually doing. I'm a designer, but I do design and research and strategy. I do all of them just like I did in 2011. I've been doing that my entire career. There's only one time in my life where I had the title of researcher. And guess what I did when I had the title of researcher? I did design and research. I've never stopped. So I've done design, research, and strategy my entire career. The trinity of UX operation, if you will. Those three things are critical. But at any rate, as UX specializations started to rise, we went from the five things that I just described, or one person doing what we'll call the trinity of UX, your design, research, and strategy. We did all those things. Yeah, I mentioned the five things. Those are the pillars, the four pillars plus strategy. But when you look at a more general operation, if I had to simplify that, I would just focus on design, research, and strategy. I focus on those three things because that's where the specializations, for the most part, come into play. As specializations started to ramp up, people didn't realize, okay, you were paying one person to do all those things. Now you've got one person doing design, one person doing research, sometimes more than that. Matter of fact, design was split into several titles. Research was split into several titles and functions. You hardly ever see somebody who's in a strategy role. And it's pretty insane. But what has happened, and this was never sustainable, and I don't know, whoever got the epiphany that we needed to split into specializations, I don't know what they were thinking about. You hired one person, now you have to hire five. Five salaries. Oh, and by the way, they make the same money, more in many cases, than the person who used to do the usability, engineering, information architecture, research, interaction, interface design, and strategy. There is no way that was going to be sustainable. I've heard about teams, UX teams of 900 people. And if you have a UX team in 2022, this one I'm thinking about, I'm not going to name the company, over 900 people, and you've got this bloat of people on the team, you only need one person. You can cut that number down dramatically. You know what's going to happen eventually if you get that kind of bloat in the department. Eventually, heads are going to roll. Somebody who's smart is going to realize what's going on. Somebody's going to realize, are these people really bringing value? Or are they just taking up space? And this is what happened, basically. Let's go back to 2011 for a minute. Not only did you have one person doing all the things in 2011, unqualified people didn't get UX jobs prior to 2011. That did not happen. You were not going to come into an interview. I mean, I was just thinking, I get asked for requests to review portfolios on a regular basis. Now, not only did I not present a portfolio for only one of my first seven full-time UX gigs, only once did I present a portfolio. What in the world would people do today? People think that a portfolio is an absolute need. I call it a necessary evil. When I was been a hiring manager, I didn't look at anybody's portfolio. I didn't need to. I know what you bring to the table just by the conversation that we have. And if you are faking it, it's going to be painstakingly obvious if you don't understand how the work is supposed to be done. So you didn't see unqualified people get UX jobs. 2005? Oh, no, you're not. You didn't get anywhere near getting an interview if you didn't understand how the work was done. Was not going to happen. And again, nobody's looking at your portfolio for the most part. I worked for a bank, and a large bank in the United States in 2005. And that was the time that I was asked to bring a portfolio. I walked them through my portfolio and I just walked them through how I did the work. That's what they wanted to see. And that was it. That was it. We didn't do anything more than that. But when I talked to people, they came with a portfolio. I really don't care. Talk to me about how you do the work and don't show me anything visual. I don't need to see it. Folks, again, prior to 2011, you didn't see unqualified people get UX gigs. Today, happens all the time. It happens all the time. A lot of managers, a lot of people leading UX departments today are not qualified. And if you were to look at the personal UX maturity level of those people, I've said it before, I say it again, it's not there. They're basically entry-level people in a leadership role. Sometimes that's needed. I know some people are like, what? Darren, you're contradicting yourself. No, sometimes the person who's in charge doesn't need to do the work. They need to know how to lead people. So the reality is, not that it's the best thing. It's not. I'm not saying it's the best thing. I'm saying it that I understand it. I understand that it's the reality. I understand that it's going to happen. If I was forming a UX department and it was my job to call the shots, I would not hire a person who did not know how the trenches operate, because those people can't respect folks who've been in the trenches. And they're going to have a very difficult time when it comes to emulating with the people in the role. So that's how I feel about it. But I understand from a reality perspective that a lot of folks are not going to put folks in those roles because they need somebody that knows how to do all the politics and all those other things. And there are times that you need somebody who can do the politics and not somebody who knows how to do the work. And that's what, unfortunately, that's what happens a lot. That's the reality of it, folks, and we have to deal with that. But along with the fact that now you do see unqualified people getting these roles, the fact that the give a chance mentality, which we were bombarded with for close to a decade. Give him a chance. And now the people that were given a chance who went straight from nothing to leading, a lot of those people, that's all they do is give people a chance. And now the people who earn the chance, we don't get the chance that we deserved. So it's interesting. And that's a UX maturity problem. Everything I just mentioned is a UX maturity problem. If UX maturity was in place, as it should be, the people who are in charge would be people who know UX and know how to lead people. That's the best case scenario. I wish it was like that. It's not. It simply isn't. And you can look for it. And it is. It's out there. There are some very well-run UX teams, but not very many. Not very many. But so to give a chance, people, that's a problem. And that was something that UX maturity, discipline-wide UX maturity took a hit. Team UX maturity took a hit. Personal UX maturity took a hit because you get people who come in who think that they arrived and they don't spend any time getting better because they don't want to get better. They just want to check. They don't want to get better at their craft. Let me give you a quick list of the fallout of specializations. Because as all those people came in, they were going into these specialization roles. And the specialization roles, I mentioned the job opening explosion, that happened. The everybody's a designer mindset kicked in around the same time, in the same period of time. That resulted in more unqualified people getting into UX because somebody was out there. Unfortunately, a very prominent UX professional was broadcasting that anybody can do the work. So, if anybody can do the work, then we can hire anybody. So they weren't really trying to be scrutinous in how they hired. They were not really looking for certain qualifications. People were copying their job description from another poorly written job description, and that was rampant in the discipline. And Darren, when you talk this stuff, it just makes me feel bad. I'm not here to make you feel good.
I'm not going to coddle you, but I do want to let you know what happened, whether it's good or bad. We need to understand why we're in the state that we're in. And it's not until we understand why we're in the state that we're in that anybody can truly do anything to resolve it. So I'm just sharing what happened. And I'm not backing off of that. That this is how we got where we are. And the more we understand it, it'll keep us from repeating. When we see it, it helps us to respond to it the right way. So I'm not going to back off of that. That's why we're in the state that we're in, because people were quiet for a long time. We can't do that. The bar of entry, back to the list. The bar of entry in UX was lowered. People didn't have to be as qualified. Expectations for UXers lowered. As a result, and I mentioned this already, but I'm going to mention this again, people interested in UX, they didn't feel like they had to learn as much in order to be successful in the discipline. And yeah, that depends on what somebody defines as success. I talked to somebody this past week, and we were talking about boot camps, and the person said, I was talking about how boot camps were a waste of time. And the person said, well, boot camp wasn't a waste of time for me. Well, that depends on how you define what a waste of time is. And I've talked to so many people, and I know about other people who've talked to a ton of people who went through boot camps, and how they, once they woke up and they realized what happened, they were totally disgusted with the fact that they had gone through a boot camp. It will take a person 5, sometimes up to 10, even more years to realize how much of a waste of time, how much you got ripped off by going to a boot camp because of what they proposed. They promise you a job. I can promise you a job. That doesn't even make any sense. They promise you to learn everything you needed to do to be a sound UX practitioner. Really? No, they don't, because they scratch the surface on a lot of content. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. But a lot of people, success means I got a job. That's not success. That means you got a job. Got a job doesn't equal success. They're not equivalent. They're not the same thing. I put a whole list of things out there in this one post when we were talking about this. I never heard back from that person ever again. And I know I mentioned, I put a list out there of things that people, I should actually talk about that on the podcast one day on the show. I'll share with you things that people, because they don't know, when you don't know what you don't know, there's no way in the world you're going to consider those things or evaluate yourself in line with those things. I know it didn't happen. I know it doesn't happen. I've talked to personally to realize who they were talking to. I've talked to a lot of people. I know what people are thinking and what they're not thinking. I've worked with these people. I've met these people all over the place. And it's just amazing. And all of these things, folks, tie to UX maturity. When your UX maturity is lower, you have a lower set of standards for yourself. And you may not even realize it, I should say. And when you don't realize it, you are in the dark until you come into the knowledge of those things. And a lot of people, when they hear it, the first thing they do is they fight against it. One of the things I told that person, I'll include that this week. How about that? I said, when you go to a boot camp, they infuse you with bias in favor of the boot camp. Now, if they infuse you with bias in favor of the boot camp, you will never look at the boot camp with your critical thinking hat on, as Debbie Leavitt might say, and you will not consider the possibility that the boot camp was selling you snake oil, that it was a con job. Boot camps are con artists, the people running boot camps. They give you something that's a semblance of where you're trying to go and what you're trying to do, but they didn't give you the full-fledged thing. And the people who have gone to boot camps and achieved success is because they brought something from a character standpoint to the table. Every boot camp person I've talked to who's actually truly successful today is because of what they brought to the table. But the people who didn't bring that, and a lot of them don't, they simply don't have everything it takes. And those kind of people, they're usually pretty violent. When you start talking about boot camps, they get very obnoxious when you start talking about what boot camps didn't have to offer. And this is the problem. Again, all tied to UX maturity. But as that ties back into the topic at hand, specializations, boot camps, that all they were trying to do was help you get a job. All they were trying to do was help you get a portfolio. That's what they did a lot of times. They put you in a position to have a portfolio. They put you in a position to get a job, to market yourself and say that you knew X, Y, and Z. But as it pertains to specializations, that's one of the reasons that a lot of those people struggle, because they didn't specialize in anything. Because specializations start to dominate the discipline because of a UX maturity problem. They start to dominate the discipline. And then a lot of those people did eventually come in and specialize in something. And it is what it is. The journey goes on from there. But basically speaking, because of the boot camps, because of what started to happen with the specializations, the definition of UX, which was already deteriorating, it began to further deteriorate because people were coming in. They didn't know how to define UX. They didn't, are we UI UX? Are we UX UI? Do we just do visual design? What do we do? How do we bring value? I just want a job anyway. Value started to plummet. The value of what UX was brought started to plummet. UX maturity, folks, with all of this crazy stuff going on, folks that don't know what UX is, folks just trying to get a job, folks seeing all the specializations, okay, well, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it just so I can get a job. And the well-being of the discipline, I talk about how if you're in UX, you're an ambassador. Whether you like it or not, you're an ambassador for the discipline. Well, a lot of people, they didn't talk about this. Nobody's bringing this up. I've never heard anybody bring it up. I know other people might and do, I'm sure, but I've never heard anybody else talk about it. But I know what I've seen. I know what I've heard. And people were not operating as ambassadors for the discipline. They were in it for themselves. I mean, ask yourself, what have you done for the discipline lately? Not about what you've done for you. What have you done for the discipline to drive the discipline forward? And if that answer is, I don't really know. Okay, that's okay. Give it thought going forth from today. And make sure that you do something, that you represent the discipline properly, that you make it a point to be the absolute best UX professional that you can be. Things of that nature. Be excellent for the discipline. You're going to benefit anyway. But if you're excellent for the discipline, that's going to help the discipline, folks. It's going to help us all. And please know and understand, as we begin to wrap up here, we moved from being generalists. That's the term we use to describe it now, when we did all those things that I mentioned earlier with the heuristics and the information architecture and the research and so on and so forth. We were basically generalists. Nobody had to call us a generalist then, because if you were in UX, you did all the things. So they didn't have to call it anything. It was expected. Now we shifted in 2011 forward, and you start to see specializations around 2017 to 2019 start to become more of a norm. Now everybody's got to tell you exactly what they do. Are you a specialist? Or, yeah, I'm a specialist. I just do research. Or, I'm a specialist. I just do design. I'm a specialist. I just do X, Y, and Z. Folks, the wheel is starting to change directions. There is a pivot underway in the discipline right now, and we're starting to hear more and more stories and more people starting to observe it, more and more people starting to experience it. There's a pivot back to being a generalist. There's a pivot in UX right now to focus more on usability, to start upskilling when it comes to information architecture, which also went shoved under the rug in 2011, but we'll talk about that soon in more detail, where people, you can't just do research. You can't just do interaction and interface design. You need to be aware of strategy. They're starting to realize, I can hire one person to do all of these things. How much money will my department save? How much more value will we bring? Amazing stuff, folks, that if that is indeed happening, and I've seen it as well, that we're starting to see a pivot back toward being more of a generalist. Because we're seeing that pivot, that means that UX maturity is pivoting as well. I know things look bleak right now. I hear it all the time. I see a lot of posts everywhere. Do I need to get out of this? Did I make a bad decision getting into this? I'm getting out of this discipline. What else can I get into? You've got a lot of people that are fleeing the discipline. Folks, there's a change happening right now. And if you are a researcher, you need to start learning more about design and strategy. If you're a designer, you need to start learning more about research and strategy. If you're a strategist, you're already aware of all of them. You need to make sure to sharpen your saw wherever you can. You're under the sound of my voice today. If you want to be a part of this discipline 3, 5, 10 years down the line and you want it to thrive, it's time to start broadening your skill set and becoming a much better generalist. If you get a job being a specialist, fine. A lot of them are still going to be out there. That does not mean that you don't have to be well-versed in things that would make you a generalist or allow you to bring value to the table associated with being a generalist. By the way, if you're a researcher, the more you know about design, the better researcher you'll be. Are you a designer? The more you know about researcher, the better designer you'll be. The more you know about all of it, and the more you know about the business, the better strategist you'll be. If you want to thrive in UX, pivot back to being a generalist, folks. Being a specialist, again, was never sustainable. Just tell me like it is. It didn't. A lot of them did, but a lot of them didn't. And it gave people, all these extra seats gave a lot of people places to hide. Don't do that today. Don't be that. Broaden your skill set. I talk about the UX cycle of excellence. Go and look up that talk. It's out there on YouTube. Look it up, dive in. I challenge you, look at the parts of the discipline that you know you're not good at and face it head on and make it your business to excel where you are weak or not as developed today. You will be so much better for it, and you're going to represent the discipline better, and you're going to bring more value, and you're going to be a lot happier down the road if you do that. That's it today. That's it for today, folks. Talking about UX maturity and the rise of specializations. That was something that highlighted a UX maturity problem, and we need to reverse that. And it's starting to turn. What part of this journey will you be on? And I hope you want to be with a successful lot of us today. But folks, that's all the time we have for today. We're going to wrap up here. Until next week, this is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, signing off. And until next time, happy UXing, everybody.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.